Totally Football Show. Today, think Trump's thing looks scary? Wait till you see our one-eyed monster, say Liverpool, as Firmino settles stormy affair at Anfield. Elsewhere, there's everything from Ronaldo scratches to burn matches to Man City collapses and Spurs undone at San Siro with the worst passing stats since the Balrog with Gandalf. All of that plus what awaits this weekend in the Premier League with, amongst other things, West Ham hosting Chelsea. It's the Totally Football Show. All right, listener, thanks ever so much for joining us. I promise it's going to be a bit special today. First of all, because we've got some brilliant stories to discuss. Secondly, because we've got some amazing people to do it. Julien Laurent, par exemple.
Hello.
Hello to you, Jules. We've got James Horncastle, your colleague on the excellent BT Goals show.
Yes, indeed.
Indeed. Good to have you with us, James. And Apakabar, oily sailor, as they say in Singapore, where you've just come back from, Duncan Alexander.
Hello. Yeah, I have.
Brilliant. You were working there for Fox Sports Asia.
I was, yeah.
Apakabar to our listeners in Singapore. Did you meet many Totally listeners?
Yeah, it was. There were quite a few people singing the show's praises.
Really?
And rightly so.
Well, that's so very sweet of them. Here's Michael Barrett, who's a fan. He says, please, can you do a stats-free episode? They get in the way of the interesting stuff. Duncan, that's not possible.
I mean, I'll just
they
go,
are the interesting
I?
Stuff.
I mean, they're the fabric of life.
Yeah, absolutely. They're very building blocks of our football understanding. You've got a good Champions League stat, haven't you, Jules?
Yeah, I mean, I forgot to mention it on the excellent goal show that you mentioned earlier about AEK Athens,
yes.
Who were the only team in Champions League history to have 1 year drawn all their games in the group stages, like 6 games, 6 draws.
See, so
I think
point,
it's pretty
Michael
cool. it's super cool.
It is.
I think
good.
It's super cool.
Here's
I mean, they lost against Ajax, so they're not going to do it again this year. And
right.
It was in 02 or 03, I think, so a long time ago. But I actually think it's super cool.
I'm not sure if you looked up the definition of super cool in the dictionary, it would be
And beaten in Champions League. Six games, 6 draws.
All right, then, Duncan, give Jules a really super cool stat.
Well, you might have seen this one on Up to Joe, but we had two English debutants for overseas teams in the Champions League this week, Jadon Sancho and Reece Nelson. So that's 7 and 8, and the previous 6 are quite an eclectic bunch. Heavily influenced by Graham Souness's glorious reign at Benfica, where he gave Champions League debuts to Brian Dean, Michael Thomas and Scott Minto.
Oh, Scott Minto?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, now, all that's all well and good, but probably the most exciting thing to talk about after this midweek we've had is Liverpool's 3-2 win over Paris Saint-Germain.
Firmino. And still...
A lot of excitement in the build-up about the front threes, but Firmino aside, they weren't the story. Sturridge, the extraordinary James Milner, Meunier, Mbappe, and then Firmino stepping in to resolve things. So much to enjoy in this game, most of it involving James Milner, particularly that shimmy he does on Neymar.
Yeah, one of the outstanding pieces of skill of match day one, as we call the opening week of the Champions League. But I was equally impressed by Liverpool's two fullbacks, Andy Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold, who, you know, I think... forgotten sometimes amid the spending spree of the summer, and you know, they're not the most glamorous high profile players, and yet, you know, they dealt fairly well with Kylian Mbappe and Neymar, and you know, what's ever thrown at those two guys, we saw it in the Champions League last year, they seem to cope with it really, really well.
It's Liverpool's 6th win in a row, the first time they've put together a run like that at the start of the season since 1961. They are for real, Duncan.
They are. I mean, Milner, who would have expected Milner to become the dominant Champions League force of the modern era? I mean,
he replaced Xavi in the Iniesta.
Yeah, last season he had the most assists, equaled the record for assists in a season, and like you say, completely dominated the other night. It was also good to see Daniel Sturridge start and score. Quite weird, I feel, because like he's almost like a remnant of another good Liverpool team, the sort of Suarez-Sterling team, and to see him kind of just slot into that lineup with aplomb was good.
All right. Unlike last season when the successes were kind of because Salah, this time the win came despite him.
And he was furious about that.
Do you think he was, James?
Oh, I don't know. What was that all about?
Slamming the bottles.
He celebrated first and then...
Yeah.
Well,
no, he did. You could
see
him.
Yeah, he did. You could see fist bump.
All right. Not the most controversial goal celebration we saw at Anfield, because that's Daniel Sturridge's, surely.
Yeah, it has to be.
Some certain amount of frustration with his own performance, surely. for Mo Salah. I imagine that scenes in the PSG dressing room afterwards must have been pretty similar. Now, there's been all sorts of damning criticism of their performance. Jonathan Wilson, for example, writing in The Guardian, PSG football is not Thomas Tuchel football. It may not even be football. They do seem, as Jonathan says, like a team that hasn't learned any of the lessons of previous Champions League campaigns, Jules.
Yeah, I wonder what Jonathan Wilson made of Manchester City last night.
Let's just concentrate on Paris Saint-Germain, shall we, here?
It's weird. And they were 10 seconds away from drawing 2-2 at Liverpool, which I didn't think would be a bad result. I mean, I understand there was a lot of bad thing or negative things about their performance.
Right.
And yet they didn't really play as a team. And Neymar and Mbappe didn't attack enough. And they were not really effective going forwards, although they were involved in PSG's second goal. But I think a lot of people in this country have been really harsh on the performance by PSG. I didn't think Liverpool played that much better.
What did they say in France about it?
No, there's still a lot of work for Tuchel to do. The thing is that their recruitment in the summer was not where it should have been, especially in recruiting a number six, because in that position they're really light. And when Marco Verratti is not there because he was suspended on Tuesday, for example, and Tuchel has to play Marquinhos, who is, like he said himself, I'm not Verratti and I'm not Thiago Motta either. So he's a centre-half who has to play there, who's not very comfortable playing there. But yet, despite all those problems, there were Tuchel at Liverpool in the 92nd minute. And if Kylian Mbappe doesn't lose that ball very cheaply, and he's not that stupid, they keep that point, and it's a very good point away from home. And then everything, what everybody would have said would have been completely different than all that bashing.
No, that's certainly true. Having said that, looking at that performance and looking at the performance of, particularly of Mbappe, who I know you were getting frustrated with, and Neymar, I mean, Thomas Meunier making comments about we have to play more as a team. You must feel that it is essentially unsustainable for PSG to have a front three that doesn't contribute to the rest of the team's performance. I mean, Cavani certainly included in that.
Yeah, definitely. I think defensively, they defended at seven in a game like that against a team like Liverpool. You just can't, it's not possible. And I think if Liverpool had played at their best, and I think if Firmino had started, it would have been a different game and PSG would have been battered. Because you just, at that level, you have to, your two wide players, whoever they are, how good they are, have to defend more. And if Robertson and Alexander-Arnold were so good as well, especially going forward, is because they were 2v1 every single time, you know, one with Salah and the other one with Mane against the two PSG fullbacks, because Neymar and Mbappe did nothing defensively. So there's a lot of things for Tuchel to look into. I think he was happy after the game that this performance came so early and not, for example, against, you know, much later in the competition, like let's say the last 16, like it was last season against Real Madrid, where we were saying the same thing. It was Rabiot and not Meunier after the defeat against Real Madrid who was saying we need to play more as a team. It's exactly the same words. So nothing has changed really with a new manager and same players really a year on. So it's a lot of things to address for him. But I just don't think everything was so bad because they were still 2-2 in the 92nd minute.
That's fair. They are bottom of the group but only 1 point behind the second and third place teams because Red Star and Napoli played out a goalless draw in Belgrade. Duncan, I think you wanted to add something on this.
Yeah, I just think we could probably be a little bit, you know, more critical of them. They did score two goals, but their second goal was their first shot since the first goal, and there was quite a big gap, i.e. nearly a half of football between them, so that wasn't great. And just to back up your point about the space the fullbacks got, Alexander-Arnold made 11 crosses, which was more than he makes normally, and more than PSG managed in total. So, yeah, they just had too much time.
Liverpool will be trying to make it 7 wins in a row this weekend when they take on Saints at home.
And after that, they've got that incredible run of Chelsea twice, once in the League Cup, once in the league, then Napoli away, and then City.
That is a run, isn't it?
Yeah, which is a pretty incredible run.
All right, well, we'll talk about their prospects against Saints perhaps a little bit later on. After this, more of that Champions League action.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
A lot of people saying Premier League sides, it's their year in Europe ahead of match day one, but Liverpool and Man United, notwithstanding, didn't really turn out that way. Ah, that puts a smile back on your face, Jules. Maxwell Cornet and Nabil Fekir sparking the surprise of the first round, beating one of the favourites, Man City. Lyon, Jules, Lyon. Even Kane scored two goals against them.
Yeah.
Why couldn't Man City?
I think the lack of competition in the Premier League, you know, the lack of intensity is clearly an issue for Manchester City when you come to big, you know, big games in big competition like the Champions League, clearly. it was just incredible. I think, you know, Lyon were as good as I've seen them play for a long time. And on the other hand, City were far from their best, obviously very sloppy. I think they were very complacent and they took this Lyon team very lightly, which I don't think you can do in a Champions League match, even at home. I think the fact that Pep Guardiola was in the stand and not being able to do anything during the match at halftime as well.
What would you have done?
Was an issue.
Or what do you think he would have done?
I just don't think the players would have had a grilling with Mikel Arteta in a similar way they would have a grilling at halftime by Pep Guardiola.
Right.
I think he would have laid into them big time. I'm not sure. I don't know what happened.
He'd have probably said guys quite a lot.
And he would have said Fekir.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah, a lot. Fekir, what a performance from him. Paul Scholes is my hero, though. Wants you to wax lyrical, Jules, about Ndombele.
Incredible. Spurs were really, really keen on him in the summer. And Lyon, who had him on loan with a buyout clause, like an automatic buyout clause for this summer, we're never going to sell him now because he's still only 21. That was his first ever Champions League match.
You're kidding.
And he just looked so good. I mean, going forward, he's so strong. And yet he's like a Patrick Vieira type of player because he's so powerful and yet so good technically on the ball. I think the way Lyon played that game was obviously suited to his qualities in midfield. And he recovered, I think, got the ball back 7 times. Diop was at 10 recovery of the ball. And then their play in transition was so good. Fekir was amazing because of the way he was able to keep the ball up, which means that his team had a breather thanks to Fekir. And then they scored 2 goals. Depay hit the post for what would have been 3-0. And it was just an incredible evening for them, considering how struggling they've been in the league, to go to City and do that with the manager under pressure, who had a hell of a week before with an altercation with a fan, you know, insulting the fan. And
what
all
happened
that
with the fan?
So he went out for his birthday, Bruno Genesio, which is fair enough. His daughter was partying in a nightclub, so he thought it was a good idea to go there and meet her and other friends.
Bet she was happy with that.
She was quite happy. Apparently, she asked him to come.
Really?
Fair enough. So the problem is, when you go to those public places, there's often a lot of people who have drunk a lot before, and not all of them might be quite keen on the job that you're doing as a new manager. And certainly this guy wasn't. So he got into a bit of a heating argument with that fan,
right,
Genesio. He ended up outside because it was getting so heated that they were chucked out of the nightclub.
Damn.
And outside, he basically wanted to fight with him and starting insulting his mum and stuff like that.
Who did? Genesio insulted the other fellow's mother.
Yeah, the new manager. And obviously all of that was filmed, put on social media. And it's not really the you know, if you're a Lyon fan,
you want
your
that
owner,
kind of passion, I think, in your manager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he, you know, he came under a lot of pressure at the game against Caen at the weekend. Uh-huh. That didn't go down well at all. And this game was huge for him, for the team and everything. And in fairness, his game plan and his tactics worked perfectly.
Oh, indeed they did. And Lyon are now top of the group with City bottom, but again, only a point behind after Shakhtar and Hoffenheim played out. Very entertaining. A 2-2 draw in the other game in that group. The worrying thing, though, from City's point of view was this was kind of expected to be their easiest fixture and they blew it. So what's going to happen when they travel to Ukraine or Germany?
Yeah, I mean, they've got a weird record at the moment in the Champions League. That was their fourth defeat in a row. Obviously, lost the dead rubber against Basel and then two against Liverpool and then this one. But given Guardiola's come out in the summer and said he's been working specifically on, you know, how to win the Champions League and how to approach the Champions League, it's not a good start.
That's right, listeners. No champion has ever started the group phase with a defeat.
That is true.
Have some of that, Man City. One positive, can I say, for City was Leroy Sané's performance. Did he look like he cared if they won or lost?
Oh, he did, yeah. And he certainly made a difference when he came on. I don't know why he didn't start. That was a really weird one, I think. But when he looked so lively and so good when he came on, and he brought them back into the game with a great assist for Bernardo Silva. And he always looked like he was the only one who could have, you know, got a second goal or create a second goal for City to definitely come back in the match.
Okay. City with the most embarrassing collapse this week in Europe. Hold my beer, say Spurs, as they travel to San Siro. We'll talk about that after this. Ah, San Siro, Tuesday night. And un popolo nerazzurro eager for the Champions League to start again. The emotion welling up at this grand old stadium. Finally back in the big time, the Nerazzurri, and taking on Spurs. Spurs couldn't pass the ball, but they were still 1-0 up with just 5 minutes to play, thanks to the efforts of Inter's goalkeeper, James.
Yeah, Samad Handanovic, who handed them the lead, you might say, should really have palmed that Christian Eriksen deflected effort over the bar. But I think Spurs had the game under control, and they've been accused in the papers in Italy of being a little bit presumptuous and underestimating their opponent and where they were playing. Once Icardi got that goal, Inter really believed, and San Siro was rocking. And some criticism Pochettino, not only for kind of leaving Trippier and Alderweireld at home, but also taking off Kane for Danny Rose towards the end. And again, you know, they conceded from a set piece. And, you know, I think Cowles would be saying that, you know, even if Spurs players were watching, you know, corners or free kicks coming in their box for 10 years, they perhaps still wouldn't learn how to defend them.
A cheeky reference there to possibly the most puzzling quote of the week from Mauricio Pochettino.
Since Eric Cantona's seagulls, yeah.
Since Eric Cantona's seagulls. Although I think I got a glimmer of understanding about what Cantona was referring to. But I really... Can you just break it down for me again? What did Pochettino actually say? A cow can watch a train going by for 10 years, but if you ask a cow when the train is coming by, they won't say anything.
Yeah,
because they're a cow.
So he's saying that there's more to life and football than experience. There are other things that go into a performance.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, speaking of cows, what followed Icardi's equaliser was the greatest minutes of Inter since Moose time, if you will. And it climaxed with, as you say, yet another set piece which Spurs conceded at, courtesy of Matias Vecino, and it sounded like this. That commentary, James, has sparked controversy in Italy.
Yeah, it's actually the feature of sort of editorial pages in broadsheet newspapers, as to, you know, they've gone beyond the kind of limits of decency in how wildly they celebrated this goal. You know, just shouting and shrieking and just generally letting their emotions get the better of them. But I enjoyed it.
I suspect that in the 1990s, a Serie A team wouldn't get that excited about being... Well, they wouldn't be playing Tottenham for starters.
But. Yeah. I mean, look, Inter's first Champions League game for 6.5 years, 62,000 there. You know, I think this was both peak Spurs and peak Inter. You get everything you kind of expect from both of them, I suppose.
We'll talk more about Inter's performance in the really fascinating edition of Golazzo this week, in which we also explore how Chievo went from good guys to very much bad guys. And also,
in Gabriele's case, bad guys to bad guys.
Bad guys. and also why Ivan Kasidis has just walked out on Arsenal for Milan. But in terms of Spurs, that's now their third straight defeat.
Tim Sherwood-esque.
Right. Are we allowed to bust out the crisis klaxon at this point, Duncan? Or do we have to wait until Brighton this weekend?
I think Brighton is a good litmus test of crises. Obviously, Manchester United furthered their mini-crisis, which they now seem to be out of at Brighton. I mean, the Kane thing is the big issue. I mean, he didn't have a single shot in that game and was left on for the whole game. Obviously, had that chance when he took it round Handanovic, but, you know, sort of messed it up. And he just looks completely off the pace. A man who was averaging 5 shots a game last season is now, you know, nearly under 2 per game this year.
Wow. But what alternative does Pochettino have? Would you rest him and play, what, Son as a false number 9?
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? They, you know, when you don't buy any new players, you are reliant on your current players kicking on.
I still have Llorente.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, as we were travelling back from the Gold Show on Tuesday, we were party to a radio phone-in, James, in which Spurs fans, or professed Spurs fans, were suggesting a change of manager, or hinting that Pochettino has lost the dressing room. It was kind of surreal to listen to, but could there be an element of truth in some of this, the way that some Spurs players are performing? And what was behind the decision to leave Vertonghen and Trippier at home?
Well, I don't know whether it was punitive insofar as, you know, their performances against Liverpool were taken into account in that, or whether they were just tired and fatigued after going to semi-finals of the World Cup. But then again, yeah, that is also a case for leaving Kane on the bench or doing something different there. I just wonder, Pochettino's been at Spurs for a while now, and we hear lots of other managers make the case that after 3 years, it's time to move on because things start to go stale. Your message no longer is as penetrative as it was once before. And I think that's partly true. I think other managers who've stayed at clubs beyond 3 or 4 years, their clubs do them a helping hand by freshening things up, by bringing in new players, or helping them achieve a different direction with the recruitment that they make in the transfer market. That's why Simeone, for example, is still at Atletico Madrid, keeps them competitive. It's why Allegri is still at Juventus and keeps them competitive. Mm. That hasn't happened at Spurs. So I do think there is perhaps an element of staleness.
With all of that, though, probably by Christmas we'll have forgotten all about this.
Yeah, perhaps.
Okay. In which case, let's move on. Spurs prepare to go down to Brighton this weekend. After this, though, we're going to talk about more of the excitement midweek, a midweek that was rich in drama, with everything from somebody winning 28-0 to Benfica giving Bayern's second goal a polite round of applause. Why? We'll find out after this.
He lines up to hit it, and yes! It's deflected for a corner! That's over 12 corners! Yes! And no time to take it, though. It's finished 0-0. What a result!
Sorry, our fault. You see, with same-game multi-bets from Paddy Power, you can combine multiple selections from one match into one bet, and you'll get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold same-game multi-bet lets you down. Paddy Power, enough of the nonsense. Applies to pre-match fourfold same-game multi-bets on UK and top European leagues. Max free bet £10 per customer per day. Minimum odds. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
All right, Liverpool are impressive. Apart from that, who are the big winners for you, Duncan, of this midweek?
Quite enjoyed the kind of new Real Madrid.
Yeah. 3-0 for them against Roma.
3-0. Could have been more. Gareth Bale looked like a man happy with where he was. Had 6 shots. Even Toni Kroos had 4 shots, which right. You can't imagine a year ago. Isco scored from a direct free kick, which was the first ever direct free kick he's taken in the Champions League. Again, probably something you couldn't have imagined a year ago. So, yeah, they look quite refreshed.
Speaking of 6 shots, there was also that attempt from Asensio, which sparked controversy. Asensio did an extraordinary... What would you call this move?
It's just a turn.
Spin. He just did a spin. The ball with him past 2 Roma defenders, and then... tried a no-look shot, which went straight into the keeper. Now, that's gone viral on social media, people talking about what a joy it is. Jules, and I've got to admit myself, take very much an opposite view on this. Isn't that right, Jules?
Yeah, and James as well.
Oh, does he?
James was not happy with me last night.
I was contrary to you guys on this. I enjoyed it. I think you can completely go for that kind of skill when you're 3-0 up at the Bernabeu and you're having so much joy. And I'd much prefer see someone attempt that and pull it off, because it would just be so much more memorable than, for example, doing the spin and then not a no-look pass and scoring. Nah. If you do the spin, no-look pass and score...
You do a no-look shot when you score a goal.
It's also a good skill to develop as well. I mean, Firmino is the master of no-look and he nearly lost an eye last weekend. So, you know, eventually he might be able to play football blind, which will be helpful.
That's an important point. I'm going to say that the term was wonderful, but the whole coolness factor...
Yeah.
Of the no-look pass is that you are saying, I can do this without even looking. If the shot doesn't work, you're saying, I can't do this without looking, and I've just wasted a glorious opportunity.
James,
to
if it's 0-0 in a knockout game, fair enough.
It doesn't
if you're
matter.
3-0
it doesn't
up
matter.
At the Bernabeu,
you look
score
stupid.
Point.
You do it. You miss.
He doesn't look stupid.
He does. Of course he does. Okay. He was not happy.
It has gone viral on the internet because people are saying
matter.
This is an amazing piece of skill that you don't see every day of the week.
The turn is, the spin is, not the no-look shot.
People said that. No football people. Proper football people like me and Jules.
The amazing thing about it.
You're killing skill in this country, you guys.
No way.
No, we're not killing skill.
He missed. How can he be good? He missed.
That's a straw man argument from James Horncastle. We are not killing skill. The skill was the turn. We like the skill, Jules.
Thank you.
What we don't like is trying to score corners points off your opponent by saying, I don't even need to look to score a goal here. Oops, I do actually, and I've blown it. So on that one, he loses.
Thank you very much. Kylian Mbappé.
A no-look finish is still a skill.
I mean, it's not. It is still a skill.
How can it
be a skill?
So what was Roberto Baggio doing? Every time when he took a penalty, he'd look the other way.
But it doesn't matter. If you don't score, you failed. Yeah. Your skill failed.
Let me tell you.
If you do a step over,
it's
not a skill.
It's misdirection.
Me failed. Come on.
Misdirection is
if you hit a direct free kick and try and hit under the wall and it doesn't work, Try
anyway,
again.
Ben will have faded this out some point. Time ago. Anyway, listeners, while they're all discussing that, you've probably got your own viewer. If you haven't, go and seek it out because it's not hard to find on social media. Anyway, 3-0 win for Real Madrid. It could have been 4-0 if it hadn't been for Asensio's silliness. But apart from them, Barcelona, big 3-0 win for them over PSV.
Four.
Oh, sorry, yeah, four. Because three for Leo Messi... Mm. Which was terrific, but possibly even more impressive was the performance of Ousmane Dembele. Why, Jules?
Yeah, great, great performance. He had a lot of space to run into on the first goal, the free kick from Messi that he got, and then scored a wonderful second goal with a skill that worked this time. You know, not some people try skills and they don't work. They fail. He worked. And then a lovely finish. I mean, he was frustrating season for him last year, his first one in Catalonia, and this one has already started in a much better way.
Looks a really scary threat for
I guess
a
when
Barcelona.
You're world champion, you know, it helps.
Yeah. World champion.
Oh, yeah.
Tick. So, also successful this week, Bayern, who went to Benfica and won 2-0. The second goal from them being greeted with this very polite round of applause, and that was...
Renato Sanchez. Back from... exile in Wales.
And looking suddenly like a player again.
Yeah, you think it's almost a year since he passed to an advertising hoarding at Stamford Bridge by mistake. And so it was good to see him back. His first appearance since playing against Notts County back in the winter.
Really?
Yeah.
Still only 20 years old.
21,
is he?
When he actually scored the goal, it was a no-look and he was trying to hit the advertising boarding and instead it went in. See? This is what happens.
That's proper skin.
Yeah. Now, anyway, Benfica had better... news in the second division of the Portuguese Women's League, where, as you probably saw, their women's team claimed a victory over Ponte de Freias by the narrow margin of 28 goals to nil.
What are they doing in the second
dangerous
division?
League?
I don't know.
It's a new team, so I think they started in the second division.
Right. 28 goals and 11 misses for Benfica. sorry, Duncan.
Oh, my God.
Duncan, is that a record? Is 28... Nil, is that a record?
No, 36-0, is it?
Who's 36? Is that like Samoa
old...
or...
Oceania, no, somewhere
that
like
was
that.
Preston, I think.
Oh, really?
Back in the 19th century, yeah.
Okay.
Pre-Nets.
But Australia, didn't Australia win 29-0 one
yeah,
day?
Yeah, they beat American Samoa,
yeah,
I think it was.
Yeah, like they qualified for the World Cup.
Okay. Real Madrid, you were mentioning, got their post-Ronaldo era underway nicely. So did Juventus. their post-Ronaldo era coming after he picked up a red card midway through the first half at Valencia. And James, after all that talk of their new man, it was all about the old lady after that.
It was indeed. I think there's been a lot of talk about Ronaldo and little talk about Juventus. And I think they showed what they're all about and why they're a team that has been to the final twice in the last 4 years. I think it was a great show of character from Juventus against Valencia. Okay, a Valencia side that hasn't won yet in La Liga, and he's going through a bit of a transition, but still, they lost Sami Khedira to injury before Ronaldo got sent off. They had four chances before they eventually got in front from the penalty spot by Pjanic. They then lost Costa when they were down to 10 men to injury. So,
which is good practice for the league, where they'll be without Costa for four matches now, with that suspension for spitting and everything else.
But I think when you go down to 10 men and you lose two of your three changes to injury, so you're limited in the tactical kind of switches you can do in difficult circumstances, I think really sort of testament how much character that team showed last night.
Right, it's a team that's going to be facing Man United soon. Well, in two rounds' time, next up, Man United. Next up, Juve are going to be at Young Boys.
Yeah.
Without Ronaldo, Ronaldo will probably also miss the trip to Old Trafford. Although they may appeal.
I think they probably will appeal.
Right.
Yeah, you don't get an automatic two-match ban. It's one with a decision on the second.
With usually a second. Though.
What would you do if you were judging this for UEFA, Duncan?
I would. Say probably one. It seemed a slightly odd red card. It wasn't a punch, it wasn't a sort of palm off, it was a sort of hair rub.
He grips Murillo's head, he kind of grips it, kind of almost digs his fingers in, but it's not. I mean, you shouldn't do it.
There's no place for that in the modern game.
Is it worse than spitting?
I don't know.
I would say not.
No.
But anyway, Man United in that same group with a fine 3-0 victory. Away at Young Boys. Ooh, Pogba, Jules.
Can I say Paul Pogba another 10 times?
Oh, yeah,
last time, that made you laugh.
Right.
No, I won't, because things are much better.
Yes.
Now, obviously...
Was that his best performance for United?
Yes, but against a very, very, very average team.
Okay.
On a plastic pitch. And in a game where I think he walked pretty much most of that game and was still the best player on the pitch. So I don't think, in the same way as he doesn't like it when people judge him when they lose at Brighton and it's all his fault, I think he will be the first one to admit that he doesn't want people to judge him on a game like this where where he could play at 50% of his ability and still be the best player on the pitch by far. So it's great for him and for United. Martial getting on the score sheet as well, it would be very good for his confidence, Pogba with the assist. But I think that was an easy game for Paul Pogba to be good in. You know, let's see.
Right.
Let's see in a much tougher game.
Let's see against Wolves this weekend.
Yeah, or even against then, you know, Juve and Valencia and those kind of games.
Right. Daniel asks, has Jose finally found the balance between defence and attack at United? And how important is having two genuine fullbacks in the team for the first time in ages rather than converts?
Yeah, of course. I mean, Diogo Dalot, again, we would need a bit more because, I mean, James Horncastle would have been good for United in a game like that last night. You know, I think it was...
It's because I'm a great player.
Yeah, young boys were, you know, that poor, really. But it was good debut for Diogo Dalot. And he's a proper right-back. And Luke Shaw had a great game as well on the other side. So that it's always better to have two proper full-backs because they've such a big part in modern play now, as we saw at Liverpool, for example. On Tuesday night. So that was good. But again, I struggle a bit to take too much from a game like this, I think.
Positive start for Manchester United. The midweek will continue this Thursday evening with Europa League action. Rangers are up against Villarreal. Celtic are up against Rosenborg in the group, which also sees the Red Bulls meet each other. Chelsea are in Greece to play Pistol Packing Pauk. And that's followed by Arsenal's game with Vorskla. Dirk Technic, I think, is the full name, isn't it? Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know too much about them. But anyway, that's on the Thursday night, and traditionally we can't really talk
they
too much.
They have a Brazilian striker called Careca.
Oh, yeah.
Vorskla, yeah. They finished third.
Do you know what Careca means in Portuguese?
No.
Bald.
Really?
Yeah. Which is ironic, because Careca, the
it's a heavy, yeah, it's a heavy name to carry, to be fair.
Now, we'll be talking about that Premier League weekend after this.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at RoyTheRoversOfficial.com.
Maurizio Sarri sitting pretty on top of the Premier League, but could Chelsea's perfect start be in danger? Because this Sunday, they travel to the East End to take on West Ham. Not only is it just 3 days after Chelsea have those exertions in the Europa League, but also West Ham, nice and refreshed, are coming off that massive performance away at Everton. They couldn't do Chelsea now, could they? Well, that's one of the questions that we put to our friend Benji Lagnado from the Stop Hammer Time podcast.
I don't know if this is slightly rewriting history, but before the Everton game, I think the mood among a lot of West Ham fans was actually pretty sanguine and not that panicky, which is very unlike us. I think a lot of that has got to do with the Crystal Palace effect from last season. I think they've done a lot of teams and managers a lot of favours by showing that you can lose your first seven games and finish 11th. And in the games that we lost, there were some positives. Arnautovic was scoring. Anderson looks like he could be fantastic. And we were probably the better team against Arsenal. Issa Diop looks like he could be excellent. Balbuena's come out of nowhere to look like a fairly solid Premier League defender. And I think having said all of that, the one thing that just didn't feel right, and it's been, you know, well documented, was the midfield, and that was the biggest change against Everton.
Benji, there was no Jack Wilshere in that Everton game, and he's going to be out for a couple of weeks after having ankle surgery. But you're all a bit excited about the next bright young thing of English football, Declan Rice. You quite like him, don't you?
No, he's rubbish, Ben. Nothing to see here. I'd recommend probably just not talking about him at all. I'll say privately to you, Ben, he really looks like he could be the real deal. And alongside his defensive work, his passing was pretty metronomic. He's been really impressive. And as an England fan, I'm personally pretty pleased that Gareth Southgate has been whispering in his ear and seems to have convinced him that he isn't Irish. It's good for all of us. He looks and plays a little bit like Eric Dyer already. And I think that actually his ceiling could be a lot higher than Eric Dyer's. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see. He's had a couple of fantastic games, so I think we've got to wait and see.
And Chelsea at the weekend, Benji, haven't got too bad a record against them in recent seasons. That probably says more about Chelsea than it does West Ham. Yarmolenko was very good against Everton. Could he make the difference against the Blues?
He's a funny looking player, isn't he? I mean, I still find his shape very disconcerting as a winger. You know, a 6'2" bruiser on the wing against Everton, he showed how difficult that makes him to play against, because I think fullbacks just aren't used to playing against wingers with that sort of strength and the skills to match. He could be a weapon, but whether he can make the difference against Chelsea, probably not. I mean, we beat them last season, but they were in a pretty stinky run of form, whereas this current Chelsea incarnation is clearly a very different beast. I think over the last few years, Chelsea have scored the same goal against West Ham multiple times, and I predict we'll see this happen at least once on Sunday. You know, we'll have a corner, we'll send one too many players up and forget all about Hazard or Willian or Pedro, whoever it is in the halfway line. The corner won't beat the first man. Everyone in the stadium will know what's about to happen. Within seconds, Chelsea will be at the other end and they'll have scored. Because however encouraging the result against Everton was, we still don't really have a single quick player in our defence or midfield. But anyway, if that goal doesn't happen on Sunday, I'll count it as progress.
Benji Lagnado, and you can hear more of that kind of thing on the Stop Hammer Time podcast. Yeah, West Ham have lost both their home games so far, and Chelsea may be arriving off a trip to Greece, but Eden Hazard isn't, because he was given the night off for Thursday because he was tired.
And a couple of other players as well, which would be very good for them and not so good for West Ham, because the form Hazard is in right now, and we saw that against Cardiff last weekend, would be worrying if you were a West Ham fan or West Ham defender.
Right. I mean, there's lots of positives. I mean, I know Benji's being cautious there, but Yarmolenko looking great. Arnautovic, fantastic. And a great relationship between the two. What do you think, Duncan? Is it madness to suggest that they could... Because they've got a great record. Three of their last six Premier League home games against Chelsea, they've won.
Yeah, they've got a pretty good recent record. They've got to come up against... we were talking about no-look finishes. They've got to come up against no-goal striker Olivier Giroud, who actually does score a lot of goals against West Ham. So he, you know, will be relishing that chance.
I also think this is a very different Chelsea in terms of style rather than personnel to the one that West Ham had success against over the last few years.
Yeah, if you think back to last season's equivalent fixture, West Ham won 1-0, and it was really a kind of, you know, the dark days of Conte sort of performance for Chelsea. And I think, you know, they're going for six wins in a row to start the season, which would be the third time they've done it, which would be a Premier League record.
By the way, if you're at a mosque in the East End this Sunday, you might find yourself with an unexpected dinner guest. Is that right, Julian?
Yeah, and Golo Conte, in case maybe he was catching a train to go back home to Paris and missed it.
Was this? So this was last weekend?
Yeah, after the Cardiff game, they had the Sunday off, so he was going to go home to Paris, missed the last Eurostar that he had a ticket on, so he thought, what can I do now? I'm going to go and pray. So he looked for the nearest mosque on his phone in Google, ended up praying there. Obviously, worshippers there recognized him, he had a chat with him, invited him for a curry next door, which he accepted, went to eat a curry at someone that he only met 30 minutes earlier, and then watched himself on Match of the Day and his Chelsea team beating Cardiff. In their front room before going home. Which brilliant. I just think the legend that is N'Golo Kanté is even bigger now after a story like this. What an incredible man.
Absolutely. Okay, also playing on Thursday, and that's also playing in the Premier League on Sunday, are Arsenal, who will be taking on that Everton side, who were terrible against West Ham last weekend. And it could get worse this time around, because Arsenal put five past Everton in both meetings last season. That's extraordinary. Duncan, more of the same this time?
You would think so, I think. I mean, I think the story that hasn't really emerged widely yet in the Premier League this season is Everton's defence, which is pretty bad. And Marco Silva particularly struggles with defence, it seems like. And like I mentioned a few weeks ago that, you know, because Everton are looking better going forward, it's kind of masking that. And away to Arsenal, who seem to improve every game at the moment, could be a pretty tough game for them.
Liverpool Saints. Saints, of course, so 2-0 up and then 2-2 it finished in their clash Monday night with Brighton. Did you see this, Jules?
Yes, I did, yeah. I'm in love with Glenn Murray. I just love the guy.
Yeah?
He's brilliant.
Excellent. Brighton will be taking on Spurs. Do you fancy his chances against the tottering Tottenham?
I just think he looks sharper and fitter, although he's, what, 34 or 35 now? Mm. I don't know. He looks like, you know, the sort of James Milner style of you get better, or Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you get better the older you get. And I just think I would hate to play against someone who's strong but mobile and also very good on the ball, you know, his little flicks and the stuff he does. I think, yeah, he's a really, really interesting player.
I think if you're a big club and you're in bad form, then going to the Amex is not always the easiest place to go. We saw Brighton turn United over there, not once but twice, and pretty much their home form is what kept Brighton up last year. I think they had the 8th best home record in the league, so Spurs, watch out.
Spurs, watch out. Liverpool, meanwhile, do have an excellent record against Saints, 3-0 and 2-0, their victories in the two encounters last season. No Ings, presumably, in this game, because he's on loan from Liverpool, isn't he?
Does that mean no Van Dijk, no Lovren? No.
And maybe we'll see some rotation from Klopp, because it's been pretty incredible that in the first five games, he's only used 12 starters.
But he's rotating in the Champions League because he had that small club PSG, so he thought, I'll rest Naby Keita, it's fine.
Even that is not many rotations, to be
just
fair.
On the subject of that, Mo Salah's form has dropped off somewhat. Only the one goal so far this season and one of Liverpool's worst performers, I think, on Tuesday night. Peter Dobson saying Harry Kane's taking loads of stick for his poor form. But Mo Salah seems to be getting away with it with the same return. Is this simply the fact that Liverpool are winning and Spurs aren't, or doesn't Salah deserve some stick as well?
Yeah, a bit of both. I mean, the chance he missed against Spurs, you know, when he got that terrible ball from Dier, that's the chance that he would have scored every single time, every single week last season. And whether he's not as fresh because of the World Cup, although they didn't go that far, you know, and the pressure of trying to match last season's performances that he had, I don't know, but yeah, he looks out of the pace a little bit, I have to say.
Yeah, he's definitely missed a lot of good chances this season. Did one against Leicester as well. There was a bit of consternation in midweek when he took his shirt off and, you know, could see his shoulder, the famous shoulder, was still strapped up. So yeah, I mean, well, you know, seasons after World Cups are always a little bit different, and I think we're seeing evidence of that.
What about Fabinho? Jules, your favourite player?
Yeah, I mean, he came on against PSG for I think the last 30 seconds or something, which would be his debut. I would like to see him this week, and I think Klopp will rotate the team. You know, he has to, especially with the runs of game coming after that, with Chelsea twice, Napoli and City. So it would be, I think, a good game at home as well to start playing Fabinho, and maybe the mini cameo he had against PSG was for that. But Klopp told him to work hard, that he would get his chance, that the team was playing well and winning. I mean, that midfield of Wijnaldum, Milner and Naby Keita, I'm not so keen on Jordan Henderson, but at least the other three, it's hard for anyone to get into that midfield three anyway. So I think Fabinho understands that, and he would get a chance and he would have to take it then.
Inspired by the common touch of N'Golo Kante, we're going to be mixing with the ordinary people this coming Monday. That's right, 24th of September. I can't believe it either. It's all happening at the Queen Elizabeth Hall. Duncan, you'll be there.
I will. Available for curries.
Absolutely. James Horncastle bringing the velvet rope. And I'll be there too. You can be there, listener. Come on down. Not that many tickets left, but southbankcentre.co.uk might be able to sort you out, as long as your party's not more than, say, 300 in size. Friday the 5th of October, we're in Manchester. James, you're along for that one. Daniel Story and Rory Smith of The New York Times will be rocking the Royal Northern College of Music. See tickets for your ticketing needs. In fact, I'm about to go and chat about those live shows on TalkSport Radio. Duncan, do you know who I'm going to be chatting to?
I don't.
Max Rushton.
Oh.
Isn't it curious?
That is curious.
How life works. So there you go. I'm looking forward to that. Max being a lovely chap, as well as a broadcasting legend. Here's a question for you, Duncan. Alex says the NHL has something called the second assist, whoever passes the puck to the person assisting the goal. If the Premier League adopted this rule, who would lead the list? David Silva? Now, some people have been suggesting that the Premier League does have this rule, and it's what you call key passes. Can you just explain?
No, a key pass is just a pass that leads to a shot. So it's like an assist that isn't a goal, essentially.
Okay, so it doesn't have to. Right.
No, but we did start collecting second assists for MLS.
Oh, did you?
The MLS, as some people like to call it, because it is a big thing in American sport. It's kind of been superseded now by some more complicated metrics.
Oh, goody.
Yeah, you know, it's a way of seeing who made the pass before an assist, but now we can go a bit deeper than that. But
sometimes the second assist is actually far much better than the assist itself.
Particularly if it's a no look.
If you think, for example, about the big chance that Aubameyang missed against Chelsea for Arsenal.
Yeah.
The ball from Guendouzi to Bellerin was extraordinary.
Right.
And then the cross from Bellerin is a cross, an assist because Aubameyang should have scored, but anyone could have crossed that ball.
Yeah.
It was the ball from Guendouzi. It was far harder to pick and to execute than the cross by Bellerin, for
example. You can take that logic further and further back, though, can't you? I mean, there's sometimes so the much, key though. Pass that unlocked something was maybe even the keeper. Mm. You know?
Yeah, but if you're further out, you know, if you're further out on the pitch, that might make a difference because you could break the line with a pass, but it's still not.
They're only given when it's a pass that is a key part of a goal. It's not just any pass before an assist.
What's been the biggest talking point at Opta Towers so far this season? What's been the thing that's had you boffins kind of throwing reams of paper up in the air and kind of shouting excitedly as the ticker tape churns out of that big computer you have in the corner?
Well, we don't use paper because that would be very 1998.
Damn. So. You're like from the future, Duncan.
Yeah, definitely.
Have a think about that. Well, I just burble on for a second about Scottish football, where Hearts are, as I think we mentioned on Monday, 5 points clear. You can hear all about the hows and whys on the Scottish, Totally Scottish Football show with Andrew Slaven. Galadso, as we mentioned, is also available, and there's the Totally Football League show. On the subject of continental football, before we round up the rest of the Premier League, what would be your big match to look forward to this weekend in Europe, Jules?
The Olympico on Sunday, Lyon, on the back of that incredible win at City, host Marseille on Sunday night, which would be pretty cool. Marseille, if you haven't seen it, Dimitri Payet with a wonderful goal on Sunday night. The keeper had a touch on it, but it's a volley from 35 yards, first-time volley as well, which is remarkable. And Marseille doing well. They're in the Europa League behind closed door against Frankfurt tonight. Okay. No fans at all at the Velodrome, which would be weird. Which is actually cool to watch on TV because you can hear everything the players say. So you will hear Rudy Garcia shouting on Adil Rami, who, by the way, rumours that Pamela may have gone.
Oh, really? They're no longer together? Pamela Anderson?
I was told. We're not sure yet, but so you would hear Garcia talking to anyone because there's no fans, obviously, and nothing, which is, I think it makes it cool to watch.
Nice. Mm. Okay. In Italy, the big game, Sampdoria-Inter. Mm. Samp fresh from a 5-0 win over Frosinone.
They drew last night against Fiorentina.
Of course.
1-1. Mm. But yeah, check in on this because they're playing Inter fresh from that goalgasm caused by Matias Vecino. So. Mm. Yeah, this is usually a good one, and I would say that Marco Giampaolo is very much the next Maurizio Sarri in terms of the kind of football that his teams play. So
nice.
They're always exciting.
If you like your football from abroad, Duncan, you might enjoy Man City's next game, which is in Wales against Cardiff. Pep will be back on the touchline across from Neil Warnock, of course. Is this a bad time to face City, you know, wounded beasts and that?
Well, there was obviously the thing from last season when they played each other in the FA Cup and Cardiff got a little bit rough and Guardiola got very angry and called on referees to protect players.
That's right. There were scenes outside the dressing room.
Definite scenes. And I think it'll be interesting to see what approach Cardiff take to this. I think, knowing Neil Warnock, it might be the same again. But we'll see. Slight curiosity on Saturday afternoon, actually, is Man City, Liverpool and Manchester United are all playing at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon in what people like to think of as a traditional time slot. That's the first time that's happened for 6 years.
Really?
Yeah.
That is interesting. Liverpool will be playing Southampton. Man United's game is against Wolves, one of the more positive stories of this opening part of the season. They've had 3 clean sheets in a row, Nuno Espirito Santo's team, since that 1-1 draw with City, in which, of course, they were pretty impressive. United, though, have been on a real run since the defeat against Spurs, 3 straight victories. What's going to happen here, James?
Well, I'm quite intrigued to see if Mourinho maybe goes to mirror this Wolves side, which will play 3-4-3. We've seen that Wolves are completely unafraid of taking on teams. You mentioned that clean sheet record that they've got, but they're very bold in their approach. We saw that against City. So I don't think they'll be particularly fazed by going to Old Trafford. Yes, this is a kind of newly promoted side, but it's a side that's got Champions League experience in it with Moutinho and Ruben Neves. So I think this is going to be probably the game of the weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
I think this will be where the main storylines come from.
United, by the way, managed to lose to all 3 promoted sides last season.
And they've lost 3 of the last 5 games after a Champions League trip.
We'll have Adam Bate, noted Wolves fan, along to discuss whatever happens there at Old Trafford on Monday. Fulham taking on Watford, which would be interesting for Fulham's manager Jokanovic, where he got Watford promoted, and then they told him, off you go, chum.
He didn't feel like he was wanted anymore.
Really?
Yeah, after getting them up.
He wanted a new deal, though, no?
Well, yeah, there is that as well.
There is that, yeah.
All right, anyway, so that'll be a fun game. Burnley are up against Bournemouth in the clash of the two longest-serving managers in the Premier League. And where was Eddie before he started his incredible run at the Cherries?
Second incredible run at the Cherries.
Second incredible.
Yeah, he had a brief trip to Burnley.
He was at Burnley himself. He's currently got Bournemouth in fifth place going into this. Burnley, meanwhile, are bottom of the pile.
Yeah, Burnley. I mean, Burnley last season kind of broke a lot of models in the sense that, you know, if you looked at the numbers, they didn't look like they should be where they were. You know, they scored fewer goals than games they played last season, but still came seventh. This year, it's like the chickens have come home to roost a bit. They've already conceded 103 shots, which is more than anyone else. And they're on course, if they keep up this rate, to basically break the Premier League record for shots allowed in a season, which will be more. The record currently is Ian Holloway's Blackpool. So, it's not looking good. They need to sort that out.
Wow. When you concede even more shots than that Blackpool side, you're in trouble. Palace are up against Newcastle. Jules, are you still predicting Palace to go down?
I still predict a tough season for them.
Okay, so it's changing a little bit there.
No.
The Alan Pardew Memorial Derby this. We spoke about the importance of Zaha, as did everyone on Monday. 8 goals in the last 10 in the Premier League. And people kicking him up in the air as a result. Is that what Newcastle are going to be doing, James?
I think that's what Newcastle do, hasn't it? Isn't it a little bit under Rafa Benitez? Well, not kick people up in the air, but they make it very difficult. They're very compact and they like to have quite a conservative approach, in contrast to the one that we spoke about with Wolves earlier. So, you know, I think, this is maybe the start where Benitez will be looking at things, and the fixture list is evening out for them. They had a very tough start. Maybe this will be where they're looking to get.
You don't see this as a tough game away at Selhurst Park?
I think it's one that Newcastle kind of have to look at as a winnable game.
Right.
Given their circumstances, they have to be going to teams like Palace and trying to get something.
Also struggling down the wrong end, Huddersfield, who will be visiting Leicester, which is probably good news for Leicester, given the way that Huddersfield have started. They haven't won in 9 games. Goalless again last weekend. Hey, the big story in Yorkshire, of course, is down the road in Leeds.
Mm-hmm.
Top of the table now, James, under Marcelo Bielsa. Jules, yeah, Bielsa, you're a big Bielsa fan, no?
Yeah, he replaced the blue cooler with a blue bucket.
Did you see that he put
upside down to sit on. And having an incredible impact there with young players. I think it's easier for Marcelo Bielsa to implement his philosophy and what he wants with younger, maybe unproven players, a bit like he did at Athletic Bilbao, than maybe with, like, you know, more experienced senior players who maybe don't want to run as much as he wants them, or don't want to do man marking like he wants them to do. And it's wonderful to see, you know, what. And they've got some really, really good youngsters coming through as well at Leeds.
Very nice. 3-0 over Preston. That's now 8 games unbeaten. Sorry, I was talking about Leicester Huddersfield before that. On to Leeds. That should be all right for Leicester, no?
Should be. I mean, Huddersfield, just as you said, can't score, which in football is not good generally. Leicester, I mean, Leicester constantly in a state of, is Claude Puel under pressure? And they've lost their last two, so I think Claude Puel might be under pressure.
Is that right, Jules?
Yeah, he was not happy at all after especially the first half at Bournemouth, which they were really dire.
Indeed. Well, before we go today, listeners, let's, as is traditional, get the odds on some of this weekend's fixtures. Over to producer Ben, who's been speaking to Paddy Power.
Thank you, Jimbo. It's Lee Price from Paddy Power on the line. Lee, the Champions League took centre stage this midweek. Contrasting fortunes for Liverpool and Man City. Can I get the odds, please, on their prospects for winning the tournament overall?
Yeah, despite that first match defeat, Man City remain our favourites at 11-2, but they're now joined at that price by Barcelona. Liverpool perhaps surprisingly a bit further back in the betting. They're behind Juve and Bayern, and you can get 15-2 for the Reds, the same price as Real Madrid. United have a massive long price at 22-1, and Tottenham 40-1, but still better odds than Inter, despite losing to them.
And this weekend, Man City are taking on Cardiff, and I fear for Cardiff in this one. What are the odds on 5 or more goals here?
Perhaps appropriately, it's 5-1 that there's 5 or more goals in this match. We're actually odds on that City score at least 3 goals, so that looks really feasible.
Spurs are in a rotten run of form at the moment, 3 defeats in a row. Poch under a bit of pressure here. Can Brighton make it 4?
I like the look of Brighton. They're just 7-2 to beat Spurs, which is a lot shorter than it would usually be. And you mentioned Poch there. The odds on him being the next boss sacked in the Premier League have halved, but it's still 40-1.
Last but not least, let's look down to the Championship. Leeds, they're like a house on fire. Are they going up finally?
Yeah, they're going to burn this place down. They're the 5-4 favourites to go up, and they're favourites for the title as well. We can't see anything stopping them at the moment unless they get knackered.
And you can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. We will return on Monday with Raphael Honigstein, Michael Cox, Adam Bate and Melissa Reddy. So it's a full lineup, getting ourselves warmed up for our date with you, listener, if you're coming to join us Monday evening at the South Bank Centre. Have you got anything special this weekend, Duncan?
No, just more football, more numbers.
More football.
Yeah.
Right. James, Jules?
I've been invited to FIFA Football Conference, where Didier Deschamps will have a Q&A and stuff with other national team head coaches.
Uh-huh.
Ahead of the FIFA The Best ceremony on Monday night, where he's been nominated for Manager of the Year, like Zinedine Zidane, for example. So I'll be there on Sunday morning, and then on Monday night, while you have your wonderful live show, I'll be next door.
Right, in the smaller room.
In the smaller room.
Yep.
With not as many stars as you, clearly, on the panel.
Right.
To see who is crowned Best Manager of the Year by FIFA and Best Player of the Year as well.
Right. What would it be like for you if Didier Deschamps wins Manager of the Year? How much will that stick in your throat?
I mean, I want him to. It's either him or Zidane anyway, so it would be a French guy, whatever happens.
Yeah.
Deschamps,
Manager of the Year?
World Cup champion, you know, only third man in history to win the World Cup as a player and a manager.
I'm just remembering when, for example, Italians wanted Brazil to win in 94 rather than see Sacchi come home with
But no, we're not that bad. It's still not my cup of tea, the kind of football he's playing, but I have to give him credit, and not just me, but everyone else leading that team where they were.
Absolutely. All right, then. Let's hope you have a good weekend, listener, and make the choice to join us again on Monday for all your footballing chat needs on the Totally Football Show. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And make sure you check out our other football podcasts, the revamped Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker and the brand new Totally Scottish Football Show. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really, and here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK, so that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.